We go behind the awards podium where the NCAA official looks at both Thomas and myself. Of course, Thomas towering over me, and he says, great job, you two, but you tied. We only have one trophy. We're going to give the trophy to Leah.
12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines talking about her presentation at the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And when I asked the dreaded question of why, why are you adamant on giving the trophy to the man in the women's 200 free, even though we went the exact same time? I actually appreciate their honesty because he looked at me and he said, "Well, I'm sorry, Riley, but we have been advised as an organization that when photos are being taken, it's crucial that the trophy's in Leah's hands."
You can meet and hear Riley Gaines making the case against men competing in women's sports at this year's Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. After the 2015 Obergefell decision by the U.S. Supreme Court nationalizing same-sex marriage, many of us knew that something else was coming just around the corner. But it was difficult to anticipate, except for those who may have been planning this already, to anticipate that it would be men competing against women in women's sports, men who think that they're women, and the sporting community just going right along, humoring them all along. And here it is, less than 10 years later after Obergefell, and that was what was next. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about the Biden administration's Title IX ruling allowing men to compete in women's sports, Riley Gaines. She's a 12-time All-American swimmer with five SEC titles at the University of Kentucky, author of the forthcoming book, Swimming Against the Current, Fighting for Common Sense in a World That's Lost Its Mind, and she'll be one of the speakers at the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference July 12th and 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Riley, welcome.
Well, thank you. That was a very kind intro, and really just couldn't be more honored, more grateful to be on with you guys.
June is going to be the 52nd anniversary of Title IX. What has that legislation made possible for you and other female athletes?
Gosh, it's wild to think about that only 52 years ago, historically, that's really not that long ago, women didn't have the right to equal opportunity, whether that's in sport, whether that's within academic scholarships, what have you. So really, Title IX, look, in its original implementation in 1972 under Richard Nixon, it was only 37 words, a super, super short, brief law that, as you alluded to, ultimately gave me the rights to compete at the collegiate level, allowed me to be successful at the collegiate level. I very proudly finished my career as a 12-time NCAA All-American, a five-time SEC champion, actually the SEC record holder in the 200 butterfly, making me one of the fastest Americans of all time, SEC Scholar Athlete of the Year, SEC Community Service Leader of the Year, two-time Olympic trial qualifier. I could keep going, but honestly, I say that to say none of those things would have been possible without Title IX, without the women's sporting category. So those women who came before me, who were really trailblazers in their own right, ultimately rewarding me with the benefits that I got to reap from playing sports, I'm indebted to them.
Did you intend to become an advocate for keeping women's sports for women only?
No way. Who could have ever imagined that this is a position that not only would it be necessary to take, but I would argue urgent that we take. So by no means did I feel prepared for this. Look, I was in dental school after college, studying to be set to specialize in endodontics, weirdly enough. I never took a government course, which is kind of concerning now that I look back. I knew we had three branches of government, but I didn't know what they did. I still don't really know what they do. I don't even think they know what they do, to be totally honest with you. My public speaking courses in college, my face turned the color of a tomato. So all of that to say, by no means did I feel prepared to be thrust into this position now where I'm vilified in some cases, but of course, really overwhelmingly supported in most cases for merely saying that there are two sexes and you can't change your sex. And each sex is deserving of equal opportunity, of privacy, and of safety.
So tell us your story, how this became a cause and into which you found yourself drafted. What happened?
So I was a collegiate swimmer. I swam at the University of Kentucky, very proud Wildcat. As I mentioned, really, I accomplished some things that I'll forever be proud of in my career. Then my senior year hits. Keep in mind, of course, I had started swimming when I was 4 years old, graduated when I was 22. So, I mean, I dedicated 18 years of my life to my sport. But senior year, I have this goal of winning a national title, which would, of course, mean becoming the fastest woman in the country in my respective event. And I'm right on pace to achieve this goal. About midway through my senior year, I'm ranked third in the nation, trailing the girl in second, a girl who I knew very well by a few 100ths of a second. But the person who was leading the nation by body lengths, might I add, was a swimmer that I had never heard of. And of course, this is the first time I became aware of a swimmer named Leah Thomas. Again, lots of red flags. This was a senior from University of Pennsylvania, which is not a school that historically produces fast swimmers. Again, leading the nation by body lengths in a multitude of events. It didn't make sense in my head. I had never heard of this person. That doesn't happen. So I'm looking up this person's name, no history of this person until that season, until finally, we really stayed in the dark until an article came out disclosing word for word. It said Leah Thomas is formerly Will Thomas and swam 3 years on the men's team at University of Pennsylvania before deciding to switch to the women's team. I read this. Of course, I was shocked naturally. But really, it was this overwhelming sense of relief because I went to look up who Will Thomas was. And let's be honest here, he was a below average man, less than mediocre male swimmer, ranking in the same event the year prior, 554th in the nation when competing against the men, which is why I say I felt relieved, honestly. I thought the NCAA would see it how I saw it, how my parents, how my coaches, how my teammates, how really anyone with any amount of brain activity would probably comprehend this. But lo and behold, the NCAA saw nothing wrong with this. And so to very briefly summarize, they allowed Thomas to compete with us at our national championships, the pinnacle of collegiate sports. He won a national title that first day, beating out Olympians, American record holders. I mean, the most impressive and accomplished female swimmers this world has ever seen, again, by body lengths. But the next day, he and I raced in the 200 free, which almost impossibly enough resulted in a tie, meaning, of course, we went the exact same time down to the 100th of a second. But despite tying, we go behind the awards podium where the NCAA official looks at both Thomas and myself. Of course, Thomas towering over me, and he says, you know, great job, you two, but you tied. We only have one trophy. We're going to give the trophy to Leah. And when I asked the dreaded question of why, you know, why are you adamant on giving the trophy to the man in the women's 200 free, even though we went the exact same time? I actually appreciate their honesty because he looked at me and he said, well, I'm sorry, Riley, but we have been advised as an organization that when photos are being taken, it's crucial that the trophy's in Leah's hands. That was it. That was all I needed to hear. It was right then and there that I decided that I wouldn't wait anymore because honestly, I was waiting up until that point. I was waiting for a coach or an official or a parent or some other swimmer, someone with political power, someone who was supposed to be protecting us to protect us. But it hit me in that moment, this realization of how in the world could we expect someone to stand up for us as women? If we weren't even willing to stand up for ourselves, this has to come from us. So again, believe it or not, that's the in short version of ultimately the scenario, the circumstance, on top of the locker room, on top of the silencing we face from our universities, that's ultimately what led me to develop the platform that I now have.
So this was not only an issue for you of being forced to compete against a male swimmer. You mentioned the locker room. What was going on there?
I mean, what I would call sexual harassment is what was going on there. Again, perspective here. This is a 6'4", 22-year-old man, fully intact, fully exposing himself, inches away from where we were simultaneously fully undressed. I'll kind of set the scene. A swimming locker room is not a place of modesty. I mean, these suits that you put on, they're skin tight, they're paper thin. It takes about 20-ish minutes to really poke and prod yourself into these suits. Of course, 20 minutes of which you're fully exposed. I can't even relay to you in words. I mean, you have your back turned. Put yourself in our shoes, or put your, better yet, put your daughters in our shoes. You have your back turned, again, undressing, putting your racing suit on, and all of a sudden you hear a man's voice in that changing space. Of course, it's awkward, it's embarrassing, it's uncomfortable. I think the best way to describe it, well, first of all, it was innate, inherent for every single girl in that changing space to cover themselves, whether it was with their hands or their towels or their clothes, and to get out of the locker room as quickly as they could. But I think the best way to describe how we felt was, I mean, it was an utter violation. It felt like betrayal. And really, it was traumatic. And not even necessarily traumatic because of what we were forced to see or how we were forcibly exploited. It was traumatic for me to know just how easy it was for those people who created these policies to totally dismiss our rights to privacy without even a second thought, without even bare minimum forewarning us that we would be sharing this changing space. So that's what that looked like. Again, a totally different issue in and of itself to that of the unfair competition, but an issue I would say was even worse than the competition piece of this debate.
So you mentioned the conversation with the NCAA official. What else did the NCAA have to say about this at the time?
As you can imagine, I mean, they remained totally quiet about all of this. Actually, not only did they remain quiet, they told us that we were the problem, that if we weren't okay seeing male genitalia, they provided us with counseling resources to educate ourselves into, actually the verbiage they used was to re-educate ourselves into feeling comfortable, because in reality, this was about being kind. This was about being inclusive. You didn't want to not be kind, do you? I mean, the gaslighting, really, the emotional blackmail that the NCAA and our specific universities, our administration, forced on us. Thomas's teammates, for example, keep in mind, these girls, they dealt with this every single day of the full season, undressing with this man in the locker room 18 times per week. Their administration, University of Pennsylvania, told them that if they did speak out against Thomas's inclusion on the women's team, and any harm were to come towards his way, whether that was physical harm, emotional harm, self-inflicted for that matter, then they told these girls that they would be solely responsible. And that would make them responsible for a potential death, and that would make them a murderer. And then they would carry on to say, and you don't want to be a murderer, do you? No, so I suggest you be kind, and I suggest you be inclusive. But, I mean, let that really sink in, what they were asking these girls, what they were telling these girls. They told them that they would have blood on their hands if they advocated for fair play or privacy in areas of undressing.
Riley Gaines is our guest. We're talking about the Biden administration's Title IX ruling allowing men to compete in women's sports when we come back. How does she respond to those who assert and still do assert that boys and men have no natural athletic advantage over girls and women?
Girls will be boys and boys will be girls. It's a mixed up, muddled up, shook up world. It's a muddle. La, 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 la.
You can meet and hear 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, journalist Mark and Molly Hemingway, Aaron Wren of the American Conservative, Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller of Has American Christianity Failed at the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
This is Molly Hemingway, encouraging you to listen to my favorite podcast, Issues, Etc. Every day you get in-depth interviews with host Todd Wilkin asking expert guests substantive, thought-provoking questions on all of the important news and issues of our day. The expert guests are in culture, law, ethics, philosophy, theology, and apologetics. Expert guests, expansive topics, always extolling Christ, issues, etc.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Pastor Matthew Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The LCMS operates the second largest parochial school system in the United States. What can you expect from a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod school? There's one race, the human race. And Jesus died for the sins of every man, woman, and child from every land and every nation. Life begins at conception. All life is precious from womb to tomb. And every student, parent, and teacher is created in the very image of God. There's right and wrong, and we know which is which from the Ten Commandments. There are only two sexes, male and female, He created them. Marriage is the lifelong union of one man and one woman. There's such a thing as objective, absolute truth, and it's found in the person and work of Jesus Christ and His Word. To find a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod school near you, visit lcms.org/schools.
Riley Gaines is our guest. She's a 12-time All-American swimmer with five SEC titles at the University of Kentucky. We're talking about Biden administration's Title IX ruling allowing men to compete in women's sports. Riley, how do you respond to those who asserted at the time and still, for some reason, continue to assert it now that boys and men have no natural athletic advantage over girls and women?
What a silly thing to say. Heck, we have a sitting Supreme Court justice who says that she's not a biologist. She can't attest to what a woman is, what a man is, what a woman is not. It does not take a biologist to know there are differences between men and women. I mean, you look at any single sport. Of course, we have men and women's sports in virtually every single sport. Let's look at basketball, for example. Of course, we just watched the national championship. Okay, in women's basketball, the ball is smaller. The three-point line is closer up in women's basketball. Even the sheer amount of layups when a female player gets a fast break compared to dunks when a male player gets a fast break. Let's look at volleyball. The net is 7.5 inches higher, a man's net versus a women's net. Golf, you tee off at different distances. Gymnastics, even, the events are totally different. Women can't do the rings or the pom horse, and men aren't doing the beam or floor events. I could keep going. We have these regulations, these categories in place for a reason. It is not sexist to say that. It is not saying that women are by any means inferior, that we are not capable, we are not strong. No, that's not what these categories are in place saying. Why they are there is to ensure safety, number one, and fairness, number two. It's because men and women are inherently different. We've known that since the beginning of time, and the way that God created us, we have known that. Never have struggled to understand that. Of course, in the nearly 250 years we've been established as a country, and again, much longer than that, that has never been something that we have not been able to gather or even have deemed it necessary to define words like woman or man or even sex itself. But here we are in 2024, where again, that's necessary we do that. And I would argue again, it's urgent that we get this done. So look, fifth graders, I mean, even younger than that, they know that boys and girls are different.
So what new rules has the Biden administration put forth regarding Title IX?
So the Biden administration has entirely rewritten Title IX. As I mentioned, it was only 37 words in its original intent. Their new rewrite is 1,577 pages long. Basically, of course, there's a lot of fluff in there, but as you can imagine, but the premise of their rewrite is equating sex with gender identity, which has very broad implications. It means that men would take academic and athletic scholarships from women, It means men can be housed in dorm rooms with women. It means men would have full access to bathrooms, locker rooms, changing spaces on college campuses. It would mean compelled speech. Your speech would be compelled. You would be forced to use preferred pronouns if you're a faculty member, if you're a student, a peer. And if you don't, under this new rewrite, you would be guilty and charged with sexual harassment. Not the man who's parading around your locker room. No, to President Biden, that's considered brave. That's considered inspiring and stunning and whatever other word they want to use. But calling a spade is grounds for sexual harassment.
Tell us about the Protection of Women and Girls in Olympic and Amateur Sports Amendment. How did that go?
Well, this was a federal piece of legislation that, as you can imagine, man, it's so heartbreaking. It fell entirely on party lines, meaning even just looking at the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act, the piece of legislation introduced in the House by Representative Greg Stube and in the Senate by Senator Tommy Tuberville. Look, 219s in the U.S. House, 219 Republicans voted in favor of protecting women and girls in sports, and all 203, every single last one of them, mothers and fathers of their own young daughters, all 203 Democrats voted in opposition of protecting women and girls in sports, which I hold this hope in my heart that they don't actually think that. They don't actually believe that their daughters aren't worthy of being called champions, because if they do, I think there's a separate conversation that needs to be had involving CPS, because it's disgusting. Again, just looking at this from the locker room perspective, you really mean to tell me they would be totally fine with their daughters undressing next to a fully grown, intact man? It's disgusting, it's perverse, and you're a sellout to your own child at that point. So it fell entirely on party lines, as unfortunately we have seen this issue play out even at the state level. But I'll tell you what's really unique here. In the way that our elected officials are voting, it makes this seem as if it's a very partisan issue, very polarizing, very divisive. But in reality, it's not. The overwhelming majority of the general public agrees that it's harmful and it's unfair to allow men into women's sports. I think the most recent Gallup poll showed somewhere near 80% of the American people agreed on this topic. And you and I both know there's not a lot of political, quote unquote, issues that we see that 80% of Americans agree on, but this is one of them. So I believe that this Title IX rewrite, I believe all of these Democrats voting in opposition of protecting women and girls, this is certainly something that will come back to bite them on the butt.
Are you surprised by the speed with which men competing in women's sports has spread throughout sports at almost every level?
You know, at first I really was. I thought to myself, this would just kind of be a one-off issue. We would, as a country, especially within specific sport governing bodies like the NCAA, the International Olympic Committee, they will meet, they will revise their policies. They saw the unjustness of what has transpired. I thought this would be handled internally very fast, but I was wrong. Not only did they not handle it at all, they're celebrating this, actually. So now I will say I am not surprised by the way this movement has taken off at an exponential rate. And I mean, think about it. What man wouldn't want to win a national title or to be granted full access entry into a woman's locker room? I mean, I can think of a lot of men who that sounds like a wonderful deal for, and again, to be celebrated for it. So I'm not surprised that this is going in the trajectory that it is. That being said, the women losing out on opportunities, the women being exploited in locker rooms, the girls being injured in their sports, obviously these things are terrible and something that no girl, no woman, no person should ever have to go through. But I believe it's waking up the people. I believe, you know, the tide is turning. Parents are waking up, female athletes, of course, medical professionals, coaches, just your everyday common sense American who intuitively knows that this is wrong. We're now being activated, so it seems. So not surprised in the direction that we're headed, but I think they can expect a lot of pushback now.
Riley Gaines is our guest. We're talking about the Biden administration's Title IX ruling allowing men to compete in women's sports. When we come back, I'll have her describe some of the negative response she's received.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University, Chicago.
Indeed, the quest for truth is at the core of a university's purpose. The liberal arts, illuminated by the revealed truths of Scripture, are powerful for equipping students for a life of self-governance. A disciple is one who follows the Master. So what does it mean to follow Jesus? He said that it means to take up one's cross. The cross is thus the symbol of dying for others, of dying to self for the sake of serving others. And a life of service is a life well lived.
Truth, freedom, vocation. Concordia University, Chicago. CUChicago.edu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Biden administration's Title IX ruling allowing men to compete in women's sports. Riley Gaines is our guest. She's a 12-time All-American swimmer with five SEC titles at the University of Kentucky, author of the forthcoming book, Swimming Against the Current, Fighting for Common Sense in a World That's Lost Its Mind. She'll be speaking at the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference July 12th and 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Folks, I can assure you that the students at Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, are taught that there are only two sexes and that there are God-given differences between men and women, boys and girls. Faith Lutheran School provides a classical Lutheran education for pre-K through 12th grade. They also offer online classes with student-teacher interaction for high school students worldwide. Learn more at flsplano.org, Faith Lutheran School, Plano, Texas, flsplano.org. Riley, you just turned 24. I cannot imagine traveling the country as you do now, speaking to so many different kind of groups on this issue, but you mentioned before being vilified by some. Describe some of that negative response.
Yeah, it's a lot of name calling, I'll say, which is what we do in like second grade, is call each other names. But I've been called them all. I've been called, of course, transphobic, homophobic, racist, white supremacist, domestic terrorist, a fascist, you name it. If it has a negative connotation, I've been called it. The petty personal attacks, right? People who have probably never played a sport in their entire lives saying, you know, well, why didn't you just train harder? Which I'm like, thank you for that. I never thought of that. What a novel idea. I mean, I've been spit on. I've been physically attacked. I've been punched in the face by these men wearing dresses, which fortunately for me, their punches really don't hurt that bad. I have been drinks poured on me, glass bottles thrown at me, people calling around, finding out which hotel I'm staying at, showing up to my hotel, standing outside my door and protesting for hours, people showing up at my house, drones flying above my house. All that being said, the support that I receive, it really is tenfold all of the negative. And it's worth it. Oh my gosh, if this isn't a hill that we're willing to die on, then what in the world? What in the world is? It is worth it. It's necessary. There's a lot of things that I'm scared of. I don't really like clowns. Snakes, no thank you. Spiders, no. But I just, for some reason, I'll never be scared of a man with a man in a dress.
This sounds like a women's rights issue in many ways, but have many prominent feminist leaders come to your defense?
No. As you can imagine, you have groups like NOW, right? The National Organization of Women. This was implemented in the 1960s, 1970s, somewhere in there. The leading feminist group fighting to maintain equality, the rights of women. They are now the ones leading the charge in dismantling women's rights. Actually, NOW, they just had an article came out maybe a week or two ago that called me a white supremacist patriarchist. I don't even know what that means. You think of someone like Billie Jean King, right? This is a woman who, I mean, we really have her to accredit Title IX too. This was a woman who, she played in the Battle of the Sexes and she won, and it was this incredible feat, not just for women in athletics, but it really propagated women as a whole. She's now fighting for male inclusion in women's sports and women's spaces. Same thing with Megan Rapinoe, right? This is a woman who, she even says that her greatest achievement in her entire athletic career was fighting for equal pay for the U.S. women's national soccer team compared to the men's national soccer team. She's pulling up the ladder behind her. Same thing with Sue Bird. I was testified before Congress recently, and the woman who was next to me was the president of the National Women's Law Center. And in her opening testimony, she said that women should just learn how to lose more gracefully to those who identify as women, of course, indicating men. Women should just learn how to lose more gracefully to men. Deeply regressive, deeply misogynistic. And again, it's coming from the party, from the people who claim to be champions of women and women's rights, but that could not be further from the truth.
What's the future of women's sports if schools are required to allow men to compete?
Well, the integrity of not just women's sports, of sports as a whole, will be entirely lost if we allow this to continue. The foundation, the beauty of sports lies in a sense of fairness. Again, that's why we have categories to begin with. That's why we have age categories. We don't have 18 and unders competing against 12 and unders. We don't have heavyweights fighting featherweights. We don't have Olympians competing against Paralympians. And that's not because we're being able-phobic, if that's even a word. We don't allow the featherweights to compete with the heavyweights because we're fat-shaming the people who weigh more. No, we're doing this to ensure safety and to ensure fairness. But if we abandon those boundaries, these categories that we've had in place for the past 50 years that really, again, have propagated women forward, as we saw with, again, the basketball national championship recently in terms of viewership and different things, if we allow this to continue, the integrity of sport will be lost entirely.
Finally, what advice can you give to the parents of a middle school or high school female athlete who are confronting this issue with their daughter?
Gosh, my message to parents is pretty simple. Defend your daughters. There's lots of fingers to point, lots of people to blame, I feel like, for ultimately where we are now as a society, right? We can point fingers at the NCAA, the Biden administration, individual universities, what have you. But I think there's a finger that can be pointed back at parents. I think we are a nation that's suffering from a lack of leadership, but really a lack of parenting, strong parenting, especially strong fathers. I think there's a couple reasons why our nation is in decline in the way that it is. One, because we live in a godless society, and two, because we have weak leadership. Certainly, again, that coming from parents as well. So parents, be willing to defend your daughters. they so desperately need you to. So much of this battle has fallen almost entirely on the shoulders of young girls and women in places where it shouldn't have. That being said, this movement very much is centered around girls and women, and we do ask ourselves the question of where are the feminists, but I think it's just as often as we ask ourselves the question of where are the feminists, we should be asking ourselves the question of where are the men. So parents, while you're defending your children, defending your daughters, teach your sons how to be strong men. Teach them how to fulfill their biblical role of protecting and providing, because there's value in that. There's a saying, and it's hard times create strong men create good times create weak men create hard times. Of course, and it's a cycle that repeats itself. There's no doubt in my mind that we are in the part of the process now where weak men have created hard times, which we can only hope that these hard times garner strong men again. But parents, expedite this process and teach your sons how to be strong men.
Riley Gaines was a 12-time All-American swimmer with 5 SEC titles at the University of Kentucky, author of the forthcoming book, Swimming Against the Current, Fighting for Common Sense in a World That's Lost Its Mind. She will be one of the speakers at the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. You can meet and hear Riley Gaines making the case against men competing in women's sports at this year's Making the Case conference. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or by giving us a call, 618-223-8385. Making the Case Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Riley, thank you so much. Keep up the good work.
Of course. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Next week on Issues Etc., we'll study the hymn, O God, O Lord of Heaven and Earth, with Dr. Arthur Just. We'll discuss the Filioque with Dr. Aaron Moldenhauer. And we'll talk with Dr. Stephen Parks about Roman Catholicism and the oral word of God. I'm Todd Wilkin. Go to church on Sunday. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.